has to do with the profound impression to which it was made. Now, I know the raising Lazarus from the dead would have had to been a profound, a lasting impact. That miracle alone, as well as the Nain widow, her son was resurrected. In fact, that particular resurrection, if you will, that particular miracle, it said the word spread throughout all Judea. And so it went around, the word went around. However, the feeding of the 5,000 probably affected the most people. And so I think that probably helped to create an additional impact as well. If we consider a lot of the other miracles, they happened in small villages here and there, like the water to wine. I don't know how many people were there at that event. I don't know if it was an Amish Mennonite type of wedding, or was it some other weddings where you have just a few select people, maybe just your inner circle. Of course, some people, as we heard in Sunday school, some people's circles go out quite a ways. And so certainly some of those factor in as well. However, here we have, and I don't know how many people, feeding of the 5,000, how many people do you think was actually there? Because it says 5,000 men. So, you know, children too, you know, would 10,000 be considered a conservative number? I'm not sure, but I think we could safely assume, you know, maybe there were upwards of 10,000. I'm really not sure how many people were there, but it was a lot of people. You know, if you think, you know, 5,000 plus mouths had eaten, 5,000 plus mouths would talk, until in every farmhouse and cottage, this miracle would be a household word. And that deep impression is registered in the fourfold Gospels. And I thought I would read the account out of Mark chapter 6. And it's also interesting, each one of the four Gospels, when you read these different accounts, all bring in different little details here and there. And I think part of that has to do with what stood out to them. And so in Mark chapter 6, starting to read in verse 30, it says, "And the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all things, both what they had done and what they had taught. And he said unto them, Come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. And they departed into a desert place by ship privately. And the people saw them departing, and many knew him, and ran afoot thither, out of all the cities, and out went them and came together unto him. And Jesus, when he came out, saw much people and was moved with compassion towards them, because they were as sheep, not having a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when the day was now far spent, his disciples came unto him and said, This is a desert place, and now the time is far past. Send them away that they may go into the country round about and into the villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat. And he answered and said unto them, Give ye them to eat. And they say unto him, Shall we go and buy 200 pennyworth of bread and give them to eat? And he saith unto them, How many loaves have ye? Go and see. And when they knew, they say, 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And he commanded them to make all sit down by companies upon the green grass. And they sat down in ranks by hundreds and by fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and 2 fishes, he looked up to heaven, and he blessed and brake the loaves, and he gave them to his disciples to set before them, and the 2 fishes divided he among them all. And they did all eat and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets full of the fragments and of the fishes. And they that did eat of the loaves were about 5,000 men. I think we'll stop with that, verse 44 there. And so this had to been quite an event to be there and breaking that bread, giving that bread, those fish to those disciples, and they just kept breaking and breaking and breaking. What would have that been like? There's nothing like a day with Christ among the hills for making a worried heart itself again to refresh his overstrained disciples. And so what did they do? Jesus and his disciples cross the lake and steer for the quiet hills by the north shore. How many of us enjoy going on a vacation? You know, you're all stressed out. And by the way, they had heard the bad news about John the Baptist. You know, maybe that all put them somewhat in the dumps, if you will. You know, what's going to happen next? And so even Jesus, you know, suggested about going to a quiet place. And I'm sure this is something that they were much looking forward to. But what happened? There was little rest that day. The rest that they had been looking forward to. These people had seen them. They saw what was happening. And they hurry round by the north end of the lake. And so it's like if you could picture a lake out there and you see the boat and you see where Jesus is. And these people ran around the lake until where by the time Jesus gets there and his disciples, you know, there's a multitude of people ready for them. As the prow of the boat grates up on the beach, Jesus and his disciples step ashore. God's great cathedral of the mountainside, whose roof is heaven, whose organ music is the sea, is thronged with a vast and eager congregation. I just had to think, you know, they had been, you know, there had been crowds before, you know, Jesus teaching, healing, and all of those things. The disciples are with them. They're all tired and stressed. And I had to think, you know, as we were talking in Sunday school about, you know, people pull in and people you'd rather not meet. And I had to think, how many times were you in a grocery store and you saw somebody and you just sort of dip around the aisle because you really didn't feel like meeting that person. And many times my experience, and yes, I've done that. But many times in my experience, the first thing you know, you come face to face with that individual. And so you're like, okay, let's just, you know, you explain, you exchange pleasantries and yeah, usually it wasn't so bad after all. And I don't know how this was. I mean, they're in a boat, you know, coming up to the shore. I mean, what, you're pretty vulnerable. You can't hide or anything like that. So you just take what comes, right? But Jesus, here is something that is very different. Because when I'm in that situation, and if it's people that you're trying to avoid or whatever, yeah, that's one thing. But looking at Jesus here, and it comes back to this whole feeding of the 5,000, it specifically says that Jesus was moved with compassion. And I think that's the difference between us and Jesus many times. Jesus sees those same people. He experienced the same tiredness that we do, but Jesus saw those same people and he was moved with compassion. And that stands out to me. So once more, we have Jesus healing and teaching. And then in the evening, he feeds them. And when done, the stars come out and the crowds are scattered. And the disciples are rowing homeward toward Capernaum, and Jesus is on the mountainside in prayer. So as we look at this, I'd like to make some observations about this miracle here. And the first thing I'd like to start is to look at Jesus' compassion. It's the fact that this miracle had its roots in Christ's compassion. You know, Christ could have probably diverted that whole thing. He could have mentioned that, you know what, today is just not your day. We need to have some time alone. We desperately need some time alone to get refreshed. And then we'll come back and we'll follow up. But he had compassion. And I think the fact that we are able to talk about the feeding of the 5,000 speaks to the compassion that he had. It says, when he stepped ashore, he saw much people, and he was moved with compassion towards them. Often for us, often we pity where we cannot help. But the compassion of Jesus sprang into action always. And it set him healing, teaching, feeding hungry men. And it still draws him to the same service today. The question is Christ your compassionate high priest? And that he will help me in my struggle to be true. He will lift me up when I have failed and fallen. He will feed me when my soul is starving. There's a story, the late Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken. He was on an airplane when an infant was screaming and crying, and it would not stop. The mother and the flight attendants tried their best to get the baby to stop with the crying, the screaming. They tried every trick they could think of. Finally, the colonel asked if he could hold the baby, and he gently rocked it to sleep. Later, a passenger said, "We all appreciate what you did for us." The passenger said that to the colonel, "We all appreciate what you did for us." Colonel Sanders replied, "I didn't do it for us. I did it for the baby." And there is a difference. He said, "I didn't do it for us. I did it for the baby." And so how many times is it with us? We have inconveniences, a baby crying. We want to steal the baby to relieve our own stress. But he did it to relieve the stress of the baby. Compassion. Christopher Searcy was playing basketball with his friends on May 16th of 1998 when he was shot in the chest and a bullet perforated his aorta. His friends helped him to get within 40 feet of the entrance to Ravenwood Hospital, and then went inside and asked for help. The hospital staff refused to help Christopher, saying that it was against hospital policies to administer aid to those outside the hospital. Eventually, a policeman was able to get a wheelchair and wheeled Christopher into the hospital, where he was helped by the hospital staff. It was too late, however, and Christopher died about an hour later. Had to wonder, many times it seems that churches, we are surrounded by people that desperately need to hear the gospel. And yet, we are content to share it only with those who manage to come inside of our church. How is it with us today? compassion inside these church walls is important. But the question is, does your compassion take you outside of these church walls to the people that are out there that need to hear the gospel, that need to hear that there is a better way, that need to be pointed to Christ? I trust that we all do. Okay, the second observation is one food for all. There was but one food for all these thousands. I'd like for you to imagine, and I don't know exactly who all was there, but I can imagine with a crowd that size, there was quite a variation. Imagine the rich were there, journeying to Jerusalem. The poorest of the poor were there, from the rude huts by the lakeside. Yonder were the quick merchants from the cities. Here lolled the farmhands from the fields. There was a mother crooning to her babe. Here and there were children romping on the green. Old men were there with the first glow of heaven about them, and young men with the first glow of earth. And yet Jesus fed them all with the same bread. There was no different, for the different sects of people. The strange thing is that no one scorned the food. They all ate and were filled. No swift relays of courses had ever been so sweet as the single dish with Jesus on the hill, the bread and the fish. The wonderful thing about Christ the living bread is that he satisfies all of us. All of us, when we partake of him, there is a satisfaction that comes out of that. What a great gulf between the Jew of Tarsus and the ignorant fishers of Bethsaida. What a world between the gentle Lydia and the rude jailer at Philippi. Yet the power of Christ that made a man of Peter was no less mighty in the heart of Paul, and that the love of God that won the love of Lydia conquered the jailer too. One thinker said this: in all of love there is something leveling, and the love of God is the greatest leveler of all ages. It knows no social barriers. It is not powerless where temperaments differ, and it comes to all this one glorious gospel of the grace of God, and that all may feed and be satisfied. We all eat the same, not out of the same dish. We all eat from the same bread, from the same source. It's one and only, and I'm thankful for that this morning. Proverbs 22:2 says, "The rich and the poor meet together. The Lord is the maker of them all." The needs that we have is all one and the same, and that need is Jesus. Jesus, the bread of life, can fill that need. Because food is not the only thing that we are hungry for in this life. You know, we expect to go home after church, and maybe at some point we eat something, right? We get hungry. Some of us are hungry for healing. Some of us are hungry for hope. Some of us hungry for all of these things. And just as Jesus provided more than enough to meet the physical needs of this crowd, he often provides more than enough to meet our needs as well. And the good part is, he meets us exactly where we are with exactly what we need. Those people didn't have to travel, you know, in our human limitations. You know, we'd have had to call up some restaurants and get some reservations going and everything. But Jesus, they could stay right where they were. And that's where he meets us with the needs that we have. Third point is, Jesus uses gifts that men bring him. Have you thought about it? In satisfying the needs of men, Christ uses the gifts which we bring him. Had Jesus so willed, he could have made stones. He could have had bread come out of the stones that were there. In times past, he called water from a rock. We know that story in the Old Testament. He brought manna from the windows of heaven. I don't know why God in Christ might not have summoned some of those hidden stories again. But Jesus' miracles were acted in parables. They weren't brought about to amaze, but to instruct. And that's important. And so he takes what the disciples give him, and he uses that to feed the crowd. It is often Christ's way to help the world through humans. It is his plan to bring the kingdom in through us. And if we take our gifts, however poor and humble, and we lay them freely at the feet of Jesus, he will bless and multiply and use them, that we should be amazed and recognize his hand. You know, Jesus could have appeared on a white horse, but God chose Mary, a human vessel, through which to bring his only begotten Son into the world. A frail human vessel. I love that God uses the frailty of man to bring about his kingdom. The fourth point I'd like to make, and that is community. Community was important. And Jesus had them sit in groups. Basically had them sit in groups of 50. Why was that? Anyone have any thoughts on that? He sort of had them separated out in groups of 50. Going on here, because this is something that, and it's something that I've wondered about. You know, as we look at this, the disciples, some of the objections that the disciples came to Jesus with, you know, is, you know, we don't have the resources. This is not possible. And part of that is, for example, they said, send the people away to the local towns to buy food. And it mentions that we are in a desolate place. We have no resources to feed them. And if you look at the Greek of what this desolate place is, it has to do with a lonely place, sort of a far out place, if you will. And so it's probably a place that's not close. Somebody estimated that for a lot of these people, they could have been 6 to 8 miles that they could have traveled to get where they were at that point. And so think of this multitude now, and maybe they've eaten, maybe it's evening, getting towards dark. I don't know what time it was, but then you just send them all away. And so what's interesting is Jesus had them to sit down in groups of 50. Yeah, and if you look at Luke's chapter, it talks about we are in a desert place. So I'm grabbing a little bit from the other Gospels as well as we look at this story. The Greek means desolate. It also means, interestingly, it means without aid or protection. So there could have been a place that could have been a little bit scary, especially if it's after dark. It also means a solitary place. And the other thing to understand is at that time, in that culture, things were pretty barbaric at that time. If you remember the Good Samaritan, it was not a good idea usually to travel by yourself. And if you think of the Good Samaritan, there is a good chance that he was by himself when he got beaten and robbed or whatever. And so what is interesting is this group arrived probably in a multitude or maybe in an unorganized fashion or a smattering of here or there as more people joined. I don't know how it was when they arrived. However, when they left, he had them all grouped out into 50s, and then they ate a meal. Have you ever ate at a table with strangers? Because eating, many times, by the time you're through with a meal, you know each other, you know, fairly well. Not really well, but at least to where, you know, you can exchange things and you visit and you open up with each other. And so I like to think that these people left as a community who could look out and see after each other after they traveled home. And so they weren't sort of all there each on their own, and now they're leaving sort of each on their own. So they left as a community who could see after each other to help them survive the journey back to where they came. And I think the point being is Christ intended for us to be community, or even church. That's what church is supposed to be. Church is supposed to be community, where we see after each other and we care for each other. I like that picture there. And then also, I think the fifth point is we see here the bread increased in the breaking of it. Okay? It was in the breaking that the bread increased. You know, a wonder worker who maybe works his magic or whatever, he could have maybe made the bread swell or, you know, somehow make it multiply that way. But Jesus blessed and he broke and gave to the disciples. And as they break the bread, it increased. I believe it was through the blessing that the miracle was wrought, and through the breaking that it was realized that it came about. He was willing to break that bread. Even though the breaking comes, and ever through the breaking comes the increase, and the using of our gifts with God's blessings are our gifts enlarged. Trade with your talent bravely, and it shall be five. Power springs from power and service out of service. Never try to do good, and you will find no good to do. Do all the little good you can, and every day will bring a fresh capacity and a new opportunity until you find that, as Proverbs says, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth. There is that scattereth and yet increaseth. And then finally, we have the fragments. Now, I had to think as James shared this morning a little bit as far as God's inventory versus ours. And I had to think, humanly speaking, there was just not near enough food. I mean, it wouldn't even have mattered, right? I mean, what's 5 loaves and 2 fishes against, 10,000 people? So man's inventory, we're depleted. But God's inventory, it's always there. But what is interesting is Jesus was very careful of the fragments. And he gave specific instructions to gather them up. One would have thought that Jesus was too rich to trouble himself about the fragments. Surely it was but labor lost to sweat and stoop and stumble in the dark to fill their wicker baskets with the scraps. But Jesus is imperious. Gather the fragments that remain is his command. The 12 disciples who a little before had been sent out to heal and to teach and preach the good news. And if you go back previous to the feeding of the 5,000, we have the account where Jesus has sent the 12 out and he gave them power and authority to go out there and do certain things. These same disciples, now in the presence of thousands, to set about sweeping the crumbs. It was not discipline the disciples that Jesus commanded the fragments to be gathered. We cannot read the story of his life, but we detect a care for the fragments through it all. Christ had a care for those crumbs. He had a care for those fragments that were still out there, left out there in the field. The fragment of a day and how he employed it, the fragment of a life and how he redeemed it, the fragment of a character and how he ennobled it. And yet, that is his great compassion to love and lift our fragmentary lives till they are brought into the image of his own. Jesus did not just meet the needs of people, he exceeded their needs. So he didn't just, there was barely enough. He exceeded it. Jesus took what little they had and performed a miracle. I think some of us, myself, needs to hear that. Jesus can take the little bit of faith that you already have. He can take that little bit of faith that you have left and give birth to a miracle. Or he can take that little bit of forgiveness that you are hanging on to and you wonder, is it enough? He can take that little bit and you can show that, and he will give you enough to show forgiveness to someone else. Or he can take the little bit of love that you think you have left, and that will be enough to rebuild a relationship. He can take those little bits, those fragments, and he can make something out of that. Jesus can take what feels like nothing and make something out of it. After all, even creation. Everything that you see here came out of what? Nothing. He just spoke it, and it came out. It was there. Jesus wants to exceed your need this morning if you let him. Finally here, this is something I came across. 5 loaves and 2 fishes. God uses what you have to fill a need which you never could have filled. God uses where you are to take you where you never could have gone. God uses what you can do to accomplish what you never could have done. And finally, God uses who you are to let you become who you never could have been. I was blessed as we look at this miracle. And as we look at how does this apply to us, and I think there are many ways as we look at this, and so through the coming days and weeks, And we wonder, you know, God, what more can you take from us? Is there anything more? God can take the little that you have, and if we give it to him, it's in the breaking that the increase can come. Let's bow for prayer. Father God, as we come before you at this time, we thank you. We thank you for blessing us, and as your people, Father, we thank you for